Views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And we are here for hour two of Sports Talk 1240. I am Andy Sukoff. We got a fun show for you today. But first, oh my God, that play by Stephon Diggs. Play of the year, I don't care what anybody says, period, stop, pretty much a last-ditch effort by Case Keenum, and Stephon Diggs does that. Play of the year, that's end of discussion. We'll get more into that in a little bit. Happy New Year to all. Brian, Happy New Year. I'll make sure you get that on the air. Also want to say Happy New Year to the guys who were here before me, Gary Harding and John Panarese. They were talking to Nick Hershon, talking about the fish stick years of the Islanders. Not everybody's favorite time. I know not mine, because I barely remember them as I was only 4 years old. But as I said to them before they left the studio, the first game that I ever went to, they were wearing those hideous monstrosities as they tied the San Jose Sharks. And that's when the San Jose Sharks and the Islanders were both terrible. And they were wearing those crest-colored things that I'm pretty sure nobody should ever want. But yet people do. Not going to judge. We got a fun show for you today. The phone lines are open for the first half of the show, 631-888-8811. So if you want to talk to me about that crazy catch by Stephon Diggs in the Vikings-Saints game in general, or the shootout at Heinz Field, or yesterday's games where Tennessee did exactly what we all thought they were and got crushed by New England, and Atlanta not able to finish off Philadelphia. So if you want to talk to us about that, please feel free to call in. And then at the bottom of the hour, we have former New York Jet Marcus Coleman joining the show. And he'll be talking about his Jets years playing under Parcells and Belichick and what his thoughts of the NFL playoffs are and what the Jets need to do going forward. But now that we got all of that out of the way, let's talk about today's games. Quite possibly two of the best playoff games you'll see in a long time. First, we go to Heinz Field. The Pittsburgh Steelers got their bye. They wanted that number one seed. And for all intents and purposes, I believe they should have had that number one seed. Because I still believe that Jesse James caught that ball. I don't care what Mike Pereira says to everybody and what Al Rivera says. That was a catch. That was a touchdown. The Steelers won that game. They should have been playing Tennessee today and not, or they should have been playing Tennessee yesterday and not New England. But alas, they play Jacksonville instead. And prior to the game, I was talking to the Kickoff Your Sunday crew, headlined by Andy Madison, and I said to him, I got a feeling that the Jaguars are going to win this game. And I told him that he was going to probably think I was crazy, but I had justification for why I said that the Jaguars were going to win the game. Having Blake Bortles this year on my fantasy team, I learned very quickly that after he had a bad game, Blake Bortles would come back and have a fantastic game. And while today was not necessarily a fantastic game by any stretch for Blake Bortles, because he only threw for 214 yards and only one touchdown, he didn't turn the ball over. He did everything that he had to do to get his team to the AFC Championship game. And mainly that was hand the ball to the guy wearing number 27, Leonard Fournette. Their big first-round pick out of LSU. Everyone had a lot of hype around him. And today was his coming-out party. Three touchdowns, 109 yards rushing. That's what you want to see from your big prize in the draft, especially come playoff time. That's the guy you want to know that he's going to help your team win and that he's a winner. And that's what Leonard Fournette is. He came through and played one of the biggest games of his career in the most important stage on the road where nobody wins, especially not in the playoffs. Nobody beats Pittsburgh Steelers at Heinz Field in the month of January, except the New England Patriots. But here comes this upstart Jacksonville team, Saxonville. We all love it. We love watching that defense do crazy things and watching Calais Campbell, the Angels Wonder, who came from Arizona and still doing some incredible things for the Jacksonville defense. A.J. Bouye, and just taking that whole thing, and their defense didn't exactly play well today, and they still gave up 42 points, which, if you do that against New England, you're going to get run out of the building. So, fair warning to Jacksonville. Don't give up 42 points to the New England Patriots, because you're not scoring 45 against them. And I give a lot of credit to the Pittsburgh Steelers, too. Because they were down 28-7 with 2 minutes to go in the first half. They could have rolled over and quit. But roll over and quit is not in Ben Roethlisberger's... It's not in his DNA. To the tune of 469 yards and 5 touchdowns. You want to talk about a fighter? There's a fighter right there. And to me, that doesn't sound like somebody who's ready to retire. Even though there was the talk all year long about will he or won't he, I think this game proves that he can still play at a very, very high level. 37 out of 58. The man threw 60 passes. That is just crazy to see somebody throwing 60 passes in a game. But when your team is down 28-7, you're going to be hucking the ball up. And when you got guys like Antonio Brown, who made one of the crazier catches today, until Stephon Diggs did his thing, he had Bouye all over him. Roethlisberger throws it up, and while he was basically holding Bouye's hand into the end zone, he still made the catch. And that guy is the best wide receiver in the NFL, and he proved it right there. Le'Veon Bell had 2 touchdowns, including a passing touchdown. He had a receiving touchdown in the third quarter, which cut the lead to 7, and then had a rushing touchdown, which cut the lead to 7 once again in the fourth quarter. You have Juju Smith-Schuster. Who's a top young wide receiver. If you're Ben Roethlisberger, why would you want to leave? I want to stay, because that's a team that you get a couple pieces on the defensive end of the ball. You got just as good a shot at winning the Super Bowl as anybody else does. How do you not want to stay there? If I'm Ben Roethlisberger and I'm sitting at home and I'm thinking about it and I say, okay, I'm gonna decide what it is I'm gonna do. I have to give a lot of consideration to playing at least another year or two. Because they have the pieces there. Their first order of business, though, is sign Le'Veon Bell to a long-term deal. And now that they're out of the playoffs, now they can work with that. And now Jacksonville, after all that, they put up 45 points. They beat the Steelers. They get to go take on the big, bad New England Patriots. The New England Patriots, who yesterday basically took the Titans to the woodshed, which everybody expected, to the tune of 35-14. 35-14. And things were going really, really well for the Titans at the start of the game. They scored. They went up 7-0. Everyone's all happy. And then their tackle, Jack Conklin, first-round pick, big guy on the line. He gets hurt. And everything else just goes down the tubes from there. And the Titans just couldn't get their offense going. And Tom Brady did Tom Brady things, which here in New York we're used to because he's been doing that to our teams for 17 years, especially mine. But that being said, I digress. This, for the New England Patriots, this is the 7th straight season that they're in the AFC Championship game. 7 straight years. That's like LeBron James playing in 7 straight NBA finals. He hasn't won them all, but he's been there. And there, I saw a stat on Twitter the other day that there are several teams that haven't even made the playoffs that many times. And Tom Brady has got to the championship game in 7 consecutive years. But there's a part of me that feels kind of good about that, though. Because it was one New York Jets that stopped it from being 8 straight AFC championship appearances in that 2010 divisional round. One of my favorite games ever, and it's probably, pretty sure the last time the Jets fans were actually truly happy. And unfortunately, that was their Super Bowl, because then they went to Pittsburgh, played a terrible first half, and couldn't recover. But you think of that kind of dominance in a sport. There's only a few, and especially in a league as big as the NFL is with 32 teams. You don't see teams have such a sustained period of dominance like the New England Patriots have had. And this has been going on for the better part of two decades. That you might have seen that is from like the 90s, early 2000s Detroit Red Wings, where they had a 10-year stretch where they were on top of the world. And they won three Stanley Cups, including back-to-back Stanley Cups in the late 90s. But they were always there. Or the Colorado Avalanche in the late 90s, where they were going up against those Detroit Red Wings. But this is now, we're now talking about a period of dominance of two decades. That hasn't been seen since the early days of sport, where you had the Yankees going to the World Series every year and having a 30-year period of dominance from the late 20s to the early 60s, where they won 17 World Series in a span of 35 years, or some number that's absolutely ridiculous. Because there's so many teams, and the talent is so spread out, that you can't have that kind of success, especially in the age of free agency, where you go to the highest bidder most of the time. And yet the New England Patriots just continue to just chug along, next man up, and just keep on keeping on. And who knows when that's going to end? Who knows how long Tom Brady plays? Who knows how long Bill Belichick decides to stay as coach? That could be another couple years. Could be another three or four. And after everybody in the Patriot organization basically denied the report that ESPN put out last week, it just seems like they're still on the same page. And that doesn't bode well for Jacksonville. But we'll save predictions for another time. Gonna go before we get to the Minnesota game that just finished out, wanna talk about the Philadelphia game for a little bit. This game really did lose a lot of luster once Carson Wentz went down earlier in the season, because you have an Atlanta team that got hot and they were playing really well, and the Eagles were just kind of getting by with Nick Foles. They lose to Dallas at the last game of the season, and they still get their bye because they had beaten Minnesota, so they got the number one seed. Atlanta actually went into that game in Philadelphia as the favorite. And instead, the Philadelphia defense did everything that they needed to do to hold the Falcons to 10 points. They made Matt Ryan miserable. They basically made it so Nick Foles didn't really have to do anything. He could just hand the ball to Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount and let them pound the ball down Atlanta's throat and get their points that way. Matt Ryan only threw one touchdown pass, only threw for 200 yards. The team in total had only 86 yards rushing, so they had less than 300 yards of total offense against an Eagles team that, when all said and done, was playing without their best player. They were playing without Carson Wentz, and Nick Foles went and threw for 23-30 for 246 yards. No touchdowns, but he basically let Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount do their thing. They had 96 yards rushing as a team, averaged 3 yards a carry, got the touchdown, and then they basically just turned it over to their defense, where they were all up in the backfield. They had many, many tackles for loss. I'm counting here. 8 tackles for loss. We got 3 sacks. Multiple quarterback hits on Matt Ryan. So he was down on the ground quite often. And you have to look at Josh Elliott. 3 for 3 on field goals, including one from 53. Missed the one extra point he had. So basically, Josh Elliott saved his team, as well as a strong defensive unit. So now, Philadelphia gets to host, and they get a rematch with the Minnesota Vikings. Sorry, spoiler alert, in case anybody hadn't seen it yet. In my opinion, this was probably going. This will probably be the greatest game of this year's playoffs. Will be the Minnesota New Orleans Saints game. New Orleans comes in there. They are the underdog against a good Minnesota defense. And New Orleans had a pretty decent defense in their own right this year. But, oh, wow, I don't think anybody was ready for what happened today. And if you want to talk about it, the lines are open, 631-888-8811. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what your thoughts were on today's games, on yesterday's games. What do you think is going to happen next week? Whatever you want to talk about, I'm here for it. Case Keenum, cool under pressure. Gets the ball back with 25 seconds to go after Will Lutz hit a 53-yard field goal. And you're sitting there. It's 24-23 with 25 seconds left. And Minnesota's got only one timeout. And I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, oh, no, here we go again. Typical Vikings. It's just like Blair Walsh last year and Gary Anderson in 1998. It's this all over again. This is going to be our nightmare. They're going to drive down the field. Forbath's going to wind up with a field goal and shank it. And I would have to think a lot of Vikings fans were feeling that because of past history. But no, Case Keenum says, no, we're good. We got this. Starts driving down the field, gets to the 39-yard line, and there's 10 seconds left on the clock. Your initial reaction is throw to the sideline, get out of bounds, and let Forbath line up for the field goal. Keenum does just that. He throws it to the sidelines. And Marcus Williams, bless his heart, the rookie cornerback for the New Orleans Saints, he's got to feel terrible after what he did. He went low to try to take out Stephon Diggs after he caught the ball. In a situation like that, you got to wrap. You can't try to bump him because Stephon Diggs is bigger than you and he's faster than you. So he had gotten up and got over. Williams went under, missed. And then Diggs, as he's going down, sticks his arm out so he gets himself balanced back up, turns around inside and sees that there's nobody around him for 10 yards and then just sprints the rest of the way to the end zone, sending Vikings fans into a crazed frenzy, which they've earned. They earned it. By all the playoff failures that Minnesota has had over the years, this one is for them, and they get to have that proud moment, which really was a lot of fun to watch. And I'm pretty sure I upset a lot of people in the restaurant that I was just at before I came here, because we're all turned around watching the game on the TV at the bar while everybody else is trying to enjoy a nice, quiet dinner. Keenum throws that ball. Diggs makes the catch and starts running. And about four of us at our table are all just going, oh, 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 there he goes, there he goes, there he goes. And all of a sudden, you hear some people are turning around like, what's happening here? And then you had that one couple that was just going, shh, shh. I'm sorry. When there's a playoff game, there's no time and no room for shh. There's pretty much only time for screaming. I really don't care that I'm in a public place. But that also leads me to the point where I need to shout out a friend of mine, my buddy Nick. He's actually the only Vikings fan I know, and he's living down in Arkansas right now. I'm pretty sure they probably heard him at the stadium in Minnesota. So for you, Nick, skull. And good luck next week against the Eagles. It's funny when you look at how this game went, and not just the last 3 minutes, but you look at the second half. After Minnesota had jumped up to a 17-0 lead, you would think that they could coast. And I'm sure Mike Zimmer had to remind everybody that no, we can't coast. We got to play football, because that's still Drew Brees on the other side of the field. And I think Drew Brees remembered that too midway through the second half, as he started to lead the Saints onto some good touchdown drives, which coincided with the craziest fourth quarter the NFL has seen this year. They get the first touchdown, makes it 17-7 going into the fourth quarter. And they get the ball back. Keenum throws that interception. They get the ball. They score another touchdown, 17-14. And when they get the ball back with a few minutes left, there had to have been a lot of thought on that sideline that said, okay, we have Drew Brees. He's our guy. He's won a Super Bowl. He's probably the greatest passer of all time. I wouldn't go so far to say the greatest quarterback of all time, because he's not. That would be the guy in New England. But in terms of pure passer, you would be remiss to say that Drew Brees is not at least in the top three. And when all said and done, he could wind up with 80,000 passing yards in his career, which is unheard of at a certain point. Now I'm sure you're going to see a lot of people start getting there, because it's a passing league now, and Drew Brees will be the first. He then goes and throws that touchdown to Alvin Kamara, which gives them the lead, their first lead game, to make it 21-20. And there's probably a lot of excitement there. And all of a sudden, Case Keenum had his moment where he said, I'm an elite quarterback too. I can go toe for toe. I can go toe to toe with the Hall of Famer that's my contemporary on the other side of the field. And he led Minnesota right back to it, got them within field goal range, gave them the lead, and they had to watch as his defense couldn't hold it. But then he got his chance again. Because that's just what the playoffs needed. They needed drama, and we got drama. And I'm actually interested to see what the ratings are going to be for this game, because I would have to think that the beginning of the game, when Minnesota was up big, the ratings were probably up, and then probably went down. You know, once people said, okay, Vikings got this, and then once people started seeing that the Saints were coming back, I'm sure that people were tuning in and were locked in on that game on Fox for at least the last hour of the game. So I would like to see what the hour-to-hour ratings were for that game and for the Jacksonville game, because that game was also a back-and-forth game where Jacksonville, up early, almost chokes it away multiple times and then hangs on to win at the end. So a furious comeback by the Steelers would have to draw good ratings as well. So now the championship matches are set up. Minnesota, Philadelphia, Jacksonville, New England. And when you look at all the quarterbacks for these teams, there are three guys there that would be going for their first Super Bowl win. And then there's one who would be going for his sixth, which would be a record. Nobody has won six Super Bowls, and Tom Brady's got a chance to do that. His next test is next week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gets to play at home, because the Patriots don't play on the road in the playoffs. I don't think they would know what to do. I don't even think they'd know how to get to the airport in January. They would probably, if somebody said, "Hey, we got to get you to Logan," they would probably say, "Where is that again? We haven't been there in a while." Because they're just so dominant, they get all the home games, and that's what happens when you win, and when you have a guy like Tom Brady as your quarterback, you're gonna win games. We got a couple minutes before we're gonna go take a break here, so I just want to remind everybody, Marcus Coleman will be joining me at the bottom of the hour, and we're gonna talk about his career with the Jets, his life as a Houston Texan, see what his thoughts are on today's game, and what some of the teams in the NFL have to do now in a changing landscape. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter at @Andy_Sukoff if you have any questions that you want to ask him, or that you would want me to ask him, or any thoughts that you might have, or any of your favorite moments. Feel free. Would love to hear from you. You got to think that as a cornerback, He probably feels for that guy in New Orleans, Marcus Williams. He's got a feel for him, because I'm sure that he's been the victim of a play like that himself and knows that feeling of just absolute dread that you, what you did wound up essentially costing your team a game. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Marcus Coleman with me when we come back. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we're back here for the second half of Hour 2. Sports Talk 1240. I am Andy Sukoff, and just in just a couple minutes, we'll have Marcus Coleman on. Marcus Coleman, a fifth-round pick in the 1996 draft by the New York Jets, same year that Keyshawn Johnson was taken, and also the year that they went 1-15. But they, at least that wound up kind of helping them because they were able to bring in Bill Parcells to come in and be the new head coach in the late 90s, and everybody knows Bill Parcells is akin to a miracle worker, and basically and turn the Jets around in just 1 or 2 years into making them pretty close to a contender. And we now have former New York Jet, Houston Texan Marcus Coleman on with us. Marcus, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing all right, Marcus. So I got to ask, what did you think of that last play of the Viking Saints game?
It was kind of like a WTH moment, to be the truth. Great play. I mean, obviously Minnesota's just trying to get a field goal, right? And they get a gift from the safety of the Saints. And that's just kind of how their season's been going, all year. Not necessarily with, lucky spectacular plays, but they've made big plays when they needed to. And congrats to them and Coach Bill, so. Definitely happy for him. I played for him in Dallas, so it's just kind of been the Viking season. Throughout the year, they've made the plays when they needed them, and luck or not, they made the plays.
And looking at that play, you see Marcus Williams, the rookie corner for New Orleans, misses the tackle on Stephon Diggs, and you played under some really good head coaches, including Bill Parcells. What would Parcells have said to Williams after a play like that?
He probably wouldn't have said anything, to tell you the truth. That's just kind of how Coach Parcells was. He probably would have given him the stare, he might have said something to him. What's today, Sunday? He probably would have talked to him Tuesday, Wednesday. Something like that, but he really wouldn't have any words for him right at that moment. Everybody else would have to talk to him, but yeah, because he probably wouldn't have said anything to us.
Okay, Marcus. When you started your career with the New York Jets, your second year with the team is when they brought in the entire Patriot coaching staff from that Super Bowl team. They brought in Parcells, brought in Belichick, brought in Weiss, Crennel, and basically everybody that Bill Belichick has ever coached with. When you saw that staff coming in, and you're a young guy, having only played 1 year in the league.
Stats at that particular time. However, you did know about Coach Parcells and you knew about Coach Belichick because those were mainly the two names that were thrown around, you know, the most. But, you know, once everybody else got in, you know, Coach Groh, Coach Crennel, Ty Bowles was there at that time. You know, once those guys, you know, they kind of came in and you start seeing the detailed work that they put in, you know, charting, you know, things, you know, random, like how far can a certain quarterback throw, you know, the deep ball to the right side of the field as opposed to the left side of the field, you know, getting it detailed, you know, down to the very yard, and you kind of understand why they were so successful. It was always detailed. The aces and O's part wasn't a big deal. But the little things in regards to the details of how to execute the plays and make the X's and O's work it seemed like that's what they focused on more than just the actual scheme or, you know, what the play was in itself. So it was, it was something that, you know, from what I know now, for sure, you know, they've been doing, you know, since they're doing the Giant days. And, you know, even, you know, Coach Belichick still, you know, conducts his business, you know, that same way. You see it down in Houston, you know, with Mike Vrabel and Coach Crennel down in that area and even offensively with Bill O'Brien. So that's kind of been their model for success, and it's worked, you know, up to this point, and it probably will continue to work into the future.
We're talking with Marcus Coleman. You're coaching now with the Iowa Barnstormers in the Arena League. Do you take some of those philosophies and apply that to the Arena League?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do, because more or less we're, you know, I know when people usually hear indoor, you know, indoor football, they usually think AFL, you know, Arena One with, you know, some of the other teams like the Philadelphia Soul and LA Kiss and teams like that. But we actually play in our league, we play outdoor concepts indoors. So everything that you see on Saturdays and Sundays, I mean, you're getting jet sweep, fly sweep, reverses, option, you know, you get all of the things that you see in the outdoor game, you know, with 11-man football, we just don't have, you know, we were missing three guys. But I take, you know, a lot of the things that I learned from that entire coaching staff, and I apply it to, you know, to what I do when I'm making a game plan. You know, what routes, you know, guys are running out of particular formations and what the yardage is, with, you know, his best throws are to his right or to his left, depending on, you know, even if he's running or scrambling, you know, what kind of quarterback is it? So, yeah, I definitely apply all of those little things, you know, to what we do and implement them in the game plan. And, you know, I pass them on to our players. And, you know, so far it's worked. You know, we had a pretty good year last year. So, you know, we're just going to continue to build on that. And I'm sure there will be more things that, you know, I could probably implement as the years go on. But so far I think I'm off to a good start. And I'm just going to try to continue to grow off of that.
I just want to jump back to Coach Belichick for a minute. You know, he's probably the GOAT at this point. When he was the defensive coordinator for your time with the Jets, did you see anything where that would have been like writing on the wall, like this guy is going to be one of the best ever?
Oh yeah, second year that that they were there as a staff, and I can't recall who we were playing at the time, but we had a game plan going into the game, and for the first quarter and a half, it wasn't working. So Coach Belichick comes over, he gets the entire defense over, and he says, "Hey, whatever we went over all week last week, just forget it. Okay, this is what we want to do. So he writes the entire game for it. This is in between, you know, offensive and defensive plays now, like during the game. He just forget everything that we worked on all week. This is what we're going to do for the rest of the game. And he just wrote out the game plan, you know, that fast, you know, on the sideline. And we went out and did it, and we won the game. And it was just kind of like when you walk in the locker room, like, okay, yeah, that dude's like a genius. Like, like you know, because I know I've never seen anything like that, and I don't know if anybody else has either, where you get the entire game plan, you know, thrown out, and then you get a brand new one, you know, in a matter of 5 or 10 minutes, if it was even that long, and it works. So, yeah, that's just one example. You know, there's several examples where, you know, you knew, you know, he was going to be something special in the NFL.
Man, I grew up a Jets fan, so when he did that press conference and wrote down the piece of paper, I resign, that just, like, basically set the wheels in motion for the next two decades. As the team, what was the reaction when he did that press conference resigning as the head coach of the Jets?
They pay a whole lot of attention to it. I know some of the older guys were, you know, Coach Belichick and the Patriots, and he kind of wanted to make his own mark, which, you know, I totally get. So, you know, it was just more shock, you know, at that initial moment. But you get a new coach, you know, he resigns, and Coach Groh comes in, and, you know, just kind of, you know, the clock keeps moving. You can't really stop, you know, what, you know, when something's in place, and you can't look back and worry about things that, you know, that were happening, whether you control them or not. So, you know, we just took it in stride and just try to continue to move on. But I think it was really shocking just to see that it happened, you know, that, okay, like, you couldn't even wait, like, a full day, you know, just, like, maybe, like, three quarters of a day before you resign. So, I think that was, you know, the initial reaction from everybody.
We're talking about Marcus Coleman. You were part of one of my favorite teams ever, and one of the teams that actually really got me into football, the 1998 Jets team that went 12-4, went to the AFC Championship game against Denver. In my opinion, that was the best secondary unit until the Legion of Boom came along with you, Aaron Glenn, Ray Mickens, Victor Green, and Otis Smith. You guys were all ball hawks and really didn't allow wide receivers.
We studied a lot in you know, between Aaron and Victor and Otis. You know, they were the, you know, of course, the vets in the group, and, you know, I taught myself and Ray Mick and, you know, Chris Hayes was there at that time. You know, they taught us how to play the game of, you know, play the game of football at the NFL level. But, you know, it was tough, and it didn't matter who was in there, whether, you know, Ray was in the nickel or he was outside, or you know, whether AG was inside or outside. I mean, it was, you know, it was a tough group, and it was talent. You know, we had talent, but, you know, but that, you know, as a unit, you know, we were very smart about, you know, how we went about our business and you know, dissect the plays and recognize a lot of plays about formations. And, you know, that's kind of how you become a ball hawk. You know, when you know that it's coming or you're anticipating that it's coming, then it's easy for you to make plays on the ball and do those things. And, you know, as young guys, we learned how to study from, you know, from those other guys. But as a unit, I would definitely have to put us up there as you know, one of the tougher secondaries, you know, that's been in the league, because we were a really good group and made a lot of plays and you know, did a lot for our defensive, you know, teams throughout the years.
And that was part of a defensive unit as a whole that was together for 6-7 years, where you had guys like Marvin Jones, Mo Lewis, and James Farrier as linebackers. Right. And you had guys like Rick Lyle, and then even though it was a couple years later, John Abraham. So you had, like, a very tight-knit unit as a defensive whole.
Yeah, I mean, we were very tight, and we were close. And, like I said, we, you know, and a lot of that starts, you know, off the field. For example, you know, myself and Aaron and Ray, you know, we always play golf together. And then Victor started playing golf with us a little bit more. Or, you know, we go out to eat, you know, as a unit and do those things. But, you know, even in the building, you know, we watched them together, you know, talked about things, you know, during practice or talked about things, you know, while we were in the building. And you know, we learned how to, you know, how everybody was thinking and learned how to, you know, grow together and be close. And you know, they brought us, you know, kind of up to their level and up to their speed. And I think that's what kind of solidified the group, us, you know, being the young guys, because they were already good. Us into the group just made the group that much better, because we brought our own, you know, skill sets as well. But we still had the same mind frame as they did, where we're not trying to allow any catches. or at least minimize the catches and make as many plays on the ball as you can.
And I've said this for years, and I'm sure you would agree with me, that had you guys beaten Denver in the championship game, you would have whooped Atlanta in the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, we would have, because we'd already played Atlanta early in the year already and already beat them, you know, pretty handedly. So we knew, you know, after seeing the game, it was like, okay, well, we got to get by Denver, obviously. You know, and when we get back to, we get to the Super Bowl and we say no, that we've taken care of them once this season already. And that's not looking, that's not looking past Denver. That's just knowing that, okay, we know what the task at hand is, but if we take care of that, then at least we know we can go into the Super Bowl game and be confident that we can beat Atlanta, because we've already done it once before. But, you know, it wasn't our time. You know, I guess it was John Elway's time, you know, so the football guys gifted him the Super Bowl instead of us, and we've been fighting to get back ever since.
And I will have to admit that I would have been really intrigued by a matchup between that Jets team and that year's Vikings team, to watch you in the secondary going up against a rookie Randy Moss and Hall of Famer Chris Carter, and seeing what Randall Cunningham would have had to try to do to get the ball to them against you guys.
Yeah, that actually would have been a really good matchup, to tell you the truth. Across the board, because they had Jake Reed at that time as well. So, you know, at every position, you know, the two outside spots and then a nickel, you know, with Ray, that definitely would have been, you know, a really good matchup, I think, for, you know, from both sides. Just because of the talent level, you know, for both teams. So, we saw him in the preseason, but you don't get a whole lot in the preseason, you know, when you face guys, so you don't get the whole gamut of the playbook. So it's hard to kind of tell how it would work out. But, no, but that would have been a really good matchup. I definitely agree with you on that, had that happened.
Yeah, we're talking with Marcus Coleman. You were actually part of one of my favorite plays of all time. It's a game against Buffalo in 2000, early September. I think it was like the third game of the year. It's the end of the half, and out comes Marcus Coleman on the field. Jets, I think, are on like their own 45-yard line. And all of a sudden, Vinny's throwing up a Hail Mary. I'm looking for Krabet or Dedrick Ward, and all of a sudden, Marcus Coleman comes down with the touchdown to end the half. And I think everybody who were watching is like, Marcus Coleman is on the field as a wide receiver? When did that happen?
Well, Coach Parcells and he's done that before with some other guys in the past, but you know, that have had wide receiver, you know, kind of backgrounds. You know, I played wide receiver and defensive back in high school. You know, I didn't, you know, and even in college I still sprinkled in a little wide out. But it was something that we worked on in practice, and once he saw that, you know, or had confidence in me being able to go up and get the ball and do all those things, and yeah, he threw me in. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those deals where you go in and you just try to make a play. And for me, it was no different than trying to get an interception, to tell you the truth. The only difference was that I was just on the offense line up in the slot and having to run a, you know, I guess you want to call it a route, run a route and make a play on the ball. But for me, it was no different. I'm trying to make a play on the ball, you know, just like I would normally do as a defender. So it was a lot of fun, you know, definitely a lot of fun. Have a great picture of that, you know, me catching the Hail Mary. And those are moments that, you know, you can't get rid of. And those are moments that you always remember, you know, especially, you know, I can now say that, you know, I caught a pass from Vinny Testaverde, you know, which to me is, you know, it's kind of cool, because I obviously wouldn't, you know, unless I'm picking him off, I would never get that opportunity. So it was definitely a lot of fun.
So whose idea was that? Was it yours? Was it Vinny's? Was it Coach Groves? Like, whose idea was it to line you up in the slot?
Wasn't mine. I wasn't thinking about that. So it obviously had to be between, you know, Vinny and Coach Groves, you know, had to come up with that, because I definitely wasn't lobbying for it. I was just trying to play DB at that point. So, you know, between, I guess, those two, you know, they probably came up with it, and you know, and just threw me in, you know, during practice without, you know, necessarily having, you know, warning, and, you know, just kind of go out there and do it.
And then after that, you know, you guys played together one more season in 2001, and then after that, started to see a change. Victor Green goes and signs in New England. You and Aaron Glenn are left unprotected in the expansion draft, and you both get picked by the Houston Texans. Were you disappointed that the Jets left you out there, or was it more of a business decision?
No, it was more of a business decision. You know, at that time, Coach Edwards was coming in, and he was running a different scheme than what, you know, kind of what we were built for and what we were doing anyway. And you know, obviously, he wanted to bring his guys in, so, you know, we get that. You know, that was our business. You know, it wasn't, you know, we weren't upset at him or anything like that. Were we disappointed to leave, you know, leave the Jets organization and leave New York? Yeah, we were disappointed in that. But we, at the same time, we understand that, okay, you know, this is business. And, you know, every coach wants to bring in their guys. But we were definitely part of something, you know, of starting a new organization, you know, in the NFL, you know, for a new franchise. And that's pretty special, you know, as well. You know, we were the, you know, one of the, I guess, original 11, you know, to start the Houston Texans franchise. So that's special in itself. So, you know, at the end of the day, we came out, you know, on the good end, you know, on the bargain, you know, as well. So there are no hard feelings, and you know, happy to make the move and kind of get a new franchise going.
And as a Texas Tech guy, that was like a mini homecoming for yourself as well.
Yeah, it was like a mini homecoming, you know, for myself. Texas Tech, and, you know, went to Lake Highlands High School in Dallas. So, yeah, it was having the opportunity to play in front of, you know, former Tech, you know, players that I played with and alumni that, you know, I knew while I was there and people from high school. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was definitely, you know, homecoming, you know, for us both.
What was the atmosphere like around that first Texans team? Like, going into training camp, you know, your expansion team, what was the atmosphere going on at that point?
It was awesome. I mean, you would have thought we won the Super Bowl and we played a game yet. tell you the truth, just because everybody in the city was so happy to have a football team back in the city of Houston. You know, they treated us very well. You know, they were, you know, always willing to help us whenever, you know, we needed or even if we didn't need it, but they always wanted to be around. We always had a lot of people at training camp. You know, we always had a lot of people come to the games. And yeah, you know, they, you know, even though we had some veterans, you know, I think the first few years I thought, you know, that fan base did a really good job of kind of managing the expectations of, you know, in the wins and losses. You know, we had a young offense paired with a veteran defense, so we were in a lot of close games. However, the younger guys, you know, particularly on offense, we just didn't know how to get, you know, kind of over the hump to win a lot of games that we probably could have. But it was great. You know, like I said, they treated us all great and loved every moment when, you know, the games when we played. And we loved it as well. We thought it was awesome to bring football back to Houston where it belonged.
And let's talk about that first game, that Sunday night game against Dallas. You're playing at Reliant Stadium in front of a crazy Houston crowd, and you go out and you beat the Cowboys in the first game in Texans history. How electric was it that night at Reliant Stadium?
That night was, I think, with the exception of maybe the first playoff game, you know, in that stadium, that's probably the most electric night that I've seen, you know, it was Reliant NRG now, you know, since then. And then you beat your, you know, we weren't even a rival yet. They were already calling it a rival. You know, you beat your in-state buddy, you know, up north, especially with, you know, and this was around the time where Jerry Jones was already talking about getting a new stadium and doing all of that stuff. And, you know, because the Cowboys were already, you know, kind of taking jabs at us because we were a new franchise, and, you know, they had Emmitt Smith and all of these other guys that, you know, all these other great players that they had. And, you know, we went out there and beat them and we showed up. I mean, it was kind of an ugly game, but, you know, we made the plays that we had to make, and, you know, defensively we did, you know, what we needed to do. So it was, you know, it was electric. I know there were a lot of people, I know this sounds really bad, but it's funny that they were like, okay, well, after that game, we didn't want to try to play any more games. I could have lost, you know, every game for the rest of the season, it wouldn't matter. Because that game, that night, you know, the first game in franchise history against the Cowboys, that was pretty much our Super Bowl, you know, for the time being. So that's all they wanted. So, you know, it's funny, you know, to hear people say that, but, you know, you should want more, you know. So in my head, I'm thinking logically, but I'm not thinking like a fan at that point. I'm really thinking like a player. Like, no, that's kind of not it. Like, we got a lot of work to do, but it was definitely awesome, though.
All right, we got a few minutes left here with Marcus Coleman. Now, what are there, like, any specific teams that you watch now that you're impressed by?
Specific teams that I watch now. Well, yes, Cisco Zim took over Minnesota. Really been good. You know, really been impressed with how he's built that organization. I mean, you're always in awe of the Patriots. I mean, that's kind of like a no-brainer. Looking at some of the moves, especially since Steven, you know, has taken the reins from Jerry, you know, down in Dallas, some of the moves that they made. But the team that really, they go back and forth, but they stay in the hunt all the time, is the Ravens. You know, Coach Harbaugh does a really good job of just, yeah, they may have a down year or two here, you know, but they're always in the mix. They're always in the mix. So I'm really, you know, he always impresses me as a coach with the talent that he gets or the talent that he doesn't have, but they still make it work. But if you look at this year, you know, obviously Peterson's the hot name in Philly, you know, what he's done with that team. So there's several teams that, you know, that are, you know, making new names for themselves, you know, and obviously, and I don't want to leave them out, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, they've been built old school, if you think about it. You know, they don't, you know, they're not spreading it out a whole lot, you know, a lot of play action, they're running the ball and they're playing good defense. They're the epitome, you know, of a, you know, kind of like late 80s, early 90s, you know, NFL team, which is really, it's fun for me to see that. You know, I know a lot of people don't necessarily like that, but those kind of have been the teams that I've been keeping an eye on for the most part.
And do you keep tabs on the New York Jets at all?
Yeah, I keep tabs on the Jets. Trying to figure out what they're doing half of the time. I know, you know, between Mike and Coach Bowles, they're figuring out something. And obviously, you know, from that side looking in, you know, I have questions as well. You know, for example, why do we have Hackenberg when we're not necessarily playing him? You know, kind of questions. Or you know, I like the young talent that we built in the core that, you know, the core players that he's brought in. I definitely love that. But need to figure out, you know, what's going on at the tight end, you know, excuse me, at the quarterback position. And probably need another big play wide out. Tell you the truth, you know, and I know, the Julio Joneses don't grow trees everywhere. But when I say number one, I mean somebody, you know, in his category. So there's just some pieces that need to be added, but I think they're going in the right direction. I think the nucleus is solid. You know, there's a lot of young talent. You know, I just look for them to build more, you know, whether it be, you know, in the draft or free agency. And you know, hopefully, you know, we can get, you know, a lot more wins next year, you know, for not just the organization, but for the city of New York.
All right. Thank you, Marcus, for taking the time out of your night. I hope we could do this again sometime.
Oh, yeah. Just let me know, man. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it.
You got it. That was Marcus Coleman, former Jets cornerback. We got a couple minutes left here, so I just want to thank my man Brian Graves making this all happen, so that way we can be out on the air. Thank you all for listening, and of course I have to thank Stephon Diggs for pretty much giving me the play of the night that I have some fuel to talk about. We got another minute here, so just want to say again thank you for listening, and I'll be back on the air in 2 weeks' time. Still working to figure out who we're going to be bringing on for that, so stay tuned to Twitter, because once I break that news, it'll be awesome. Until then, have a good night, and go Jaguars! This is Sports Talk 1240.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.